Namaste. Today's reflection, we take on a subject which seems to drive us in various ways. That which sometimes becomes a spur to make our works immortal and endure through time. Sometimes it is the cause of much impatience in life, much frustration, but also sometimes the cause of much fear and anxiety, and it is the issue of death. Now, a lot of fear about death is simply because we don't know what it is. It's like when we know a thing, we are no more afraid because we know what it stands for, what it means, and we can possibly find ways and means and strategies to deal with it. But when we don't know something, it is a much greater fear. So a known danger is much better than an unknown danger. So this is why even now, because people don't know, you know, they talk about viruses here, there, everywhere. So it leads there in the mind of man. So the uncertainty leads to a mounting anxiety. Whereas we look at it that there are areas where it is there, as we know it, right? There are clusters, and you know, we do whatever we need to do from them, at them, then it's much easier to handle it. So anyways, so about death. Now, regarding death, actually at one level, if you look at it, you know, that's why it's sometimes visualized as a sphinx, which has a body of a lion, face of a woman, and wings of a bird. In some mythologies, death is symbolized as sphinx. But actually, the same sphinx which slays, because he slays the traveler, is also the giver of life. So when we know the mystery of death, then actually we discover immortality. That's why the Upanishad says cryptically that death, and Shrivindra puts it much more directly, that death is a passage, a stumbling stair, a stride we take towards immortal life. So what really is death? One thing we know, that we don't know what happens beyond it. There are accounts by people out of body experience, or other near death experiences. Now there are a number of them. Dr. Raymond Moody has done study, many others, past life regression, that there is some kind of existence which exists after death. So death is not cessation of existence. It is the cessation of the body. And apparently, after a while, after death, there is also the dropping off of the different aspects of a personality. But there is something which continues to exist and experience creation and life, albeit differently. Because it's no more through these, we experience creation right now through these physical senses. But in death, we experience after death in a different sense. It's much like, let's say in dream. In dream, we experience things in a very different space-time continuum. There are different substances, there are different beings. It's a whole different geography. And because we don't remember our dreams, so we get disoriented. But somebody who has made a systematic study of the dreams, like Mother did, or, you know, through a process of yoga as it happens within us. So then we can understand. We know even in dream that we are existing and we are dreaming. There's somebody even in dream knows that we are dreaming. So who is that someone? That's how the whole science of yoga ends up declaring that actually there is no death as such, where there is a complete annihilation of who we are. What happens is the body falls off and something within us remains immortal. That has been the knowledge of all the mystics all over the world. Isha Upanishad in fact tells us to remember that, you know, even though the body, its end is ashes, bhasmantam shariram, but this will which survives, that, you know, we must remember the original will which has made this body and personality held together, is kind of a central will. And this will, afterwards, it begins to, all the different kinds of wills which held the body together begins to disperse, and the central will within us, the psychic essence, it goes back to its own world and comes back into this adventure of time and space. Now, this is if we take the Hindu tradition, the ancient knowledge says that after death there is in us an immortal element, and it goes back into the psychic world. It travels through different worlds, first through the vital, which is close to the physical world, and there it experiences what are ignorantly called as heaven and hell. There are no real heaven hell in that way, but there are states of consciousness, there are regions and domains where there are typal beings, and depending on our state, supposing all my life I have lived in fear, and I have terrorized people. So supposing we do that, that we are either in receiving or giving to the world, we have given fear. So what happens when we depart? By affinity, quite naturally, logically, we will go into worlds of terror. Similarly, if we depart in a state of gloom and depression, that's why suicide is the worst form of exit, because then in a state of depression when we go, we enter into these dark sunless worlds, because by affinity we go there. Similarly, if we have departed in a state of peace, contentment, remembering the divine especially. Now, when we depart remembering the divine, by affinity we go to the divine worlds. Whatever way we have conceived the divine, we go to those worlds. Now, so the state of consciousness at the time of death depends on the state of consciousness during our life, and that determines how we will navigate through the vital world. And it is for this vital world that in ancient traditions, Shraddh used to be done. But now, of course, it's meaningless. They are neither people with that occult knowledge. And now humanity has developed. It has become more refined. And there are simple ways of doing it. We don't need to go through those elaborate processes. We just need to send love rather than our tears and grief to the one who has departed. And the journey will become smoother through this passage. And as the mother has said in her whole occult work in the realm of the vital, that those who have faith in the divine, they now she has created a kind of, we can say, a bullet train passage. So they can enter into that passage which is safe, and through that they can go directly to the psychic world without any difficulty or pain. To those who have turned to her, there is nothing even to think about, because we go to Sri Aurobindo's world and they come, or one of their deputed angels comes and takes us to that world. So nevertheless, after that we go to the mental world, which has its own heavens, and then from there we go to the psychic world. The psychic world is just a little below the world of the true gods, that means the overmind, just below that, and we go there, we go into a state of reconstituting sleep. This whole thing is described very beautifully in Savitri, book 2, canto 14, the world soul. And there we assimilate all the experiences of the previous life. So when we are departing, that's why this time is needed, because the soul is reviewing its life. That's the time when it doesn't review the life in the mental way, which always justifies, or in the vital way, which is like about, you know, this was pleasant, so therefore it was good, this was painful, therefore bad. But psychic way of looking at life is very different. And if we accustom ourselves every day at looking at life through the psychic mirror, then we will never be deceived. But nevertheless, it's a true way of looking at life. The true moments when we really were at its at our peak. It's not just about visiting a temple, etc. Psychic moments may take place when we are sitting before a landscape, beautiful landscape, and we enter into a reverie of vastness. It may be a moment when something noble springs within us, and we are willing to sacrifice even our life for something much greater. The psychic moment be a moment of true love. The psychic moment may be a moment of gratitude springing from the depths of our heart. So, and of course, psychic moment is moment when we have true bhakti and surrender for the divine, but that is a rare grace. So these are the psychic moments which it accumulates from the whole life's history. Then it sees that what are the ones, what are the moments, what are the tendencies which it has not yet worked upon. There are certain things which it has gone through as experience and learnt out of the school of lower nature, with ignorance as teacher and measures, desire and company as the teaching staff. So it has learned certain things, but there are certain things which are like unfinished curve of learning. So it has to learn them in another life. So with carrying all that, it goes into a reconstituting sleep. Now it must assimilate all this, turn this human life's currency into a psychic equivalent currency, like imprints upon the soul. Now, depending upon this life, it wants to now project itself into a future life, that what I need to still learn. And of course, if somebody has gone through all these learning, rare phenomena, one is a free being, then one comes to serve the divine very consciously. So that is, of course, a rare thing. But ordinarily, normally what happens is that one realizes that, okay, there is an experience which is left incomplete. Mother gives an example. Say somebody has been a very rich person, born in a very rich country. So he realizes that no, it's no big deal. It's not really what has helped me to progress. And next life, he wants to be born in an ordinary peasant family in a poor country. Now, it's very interesting. When we know this, then all this attachment to one way of life, one country, this pride of having money, wealthy person, born in an affluent family, all this goes away, because the psychic knowledge tells us that we have been born in many countries and many climes. So psychic knows it. So next time, depending on its need of experience, it projects itself. When the time is ready, when it wakes up from sleep, it looks for a parent in whom it can project itself and take birth and go through the necessary experience. So this is one part, and this is the whole logic of rebirth. It's about evolutionary growth. It has nothing to do with papa and punya and reward and punishment. That makes an absurdity of the divine wisdom, turning it into a tribunal of justice. There is a justice operating in the world, but rebirth is not about that. It is something much more profound. The divine is concerned mainly and only about our growth and progress towards the divinity. So whatever conditions help us in that growth, that is what the psychic chooses. Then of course, once it comes, because this world is governed by a lot of ignorance, so naturally there are accidents, there are all kinds of situations, it must navigate through them, and even they become feeders for the soul to grow. So this is one part of it. Now when we look at death from that standpoint, where is the grief? Why are we so much afraid of dying? Where do we go? We go into God's lap. We go away from his office, or the office where God has put us, into our true home, into the divine home. We go into the divine's lap. So where is the sting? And then when we come back for a further progress. Even if we were in the best of circumstances, the next birth is going to be better in terms of our evolution. That's what we want. So where is the question of fear and worry and anxiety? If we truly, truly believe that nainam chiddanti shastrani nainam dhati pavakam, if we really believe in that, not just as a kind of, you know, reading from the Gita, we should not be scared. Even the arrows cannot wound it, bullets cannot pierce it. Death would die. Death dies. Every time we die, death dies. Because it realizes there is something in us which it cannot take away. And going through life to life, we grow into a full-fledged psychic being. Death is a necessary process through which we grow. So again, there is nothing to fear. So as far as the Hindu, Sikh, Buddhist belief system, Buddhist, of course, there is a little bit of problem, because Buddhism doesn't really believe in an individual soul the way it is understood today. Not the original teaching of the Buddha. So the karmic theory and rebirth are very questionable things, as also in Jainism. But that is the way it is understood today, not the original teaching of Buddha and Mahavira, and that's not what we should enter into. But by and large, all Indic faiths believe that there is an individual soul and there is a divine being and there is a rebirth. So we have this basic belief, this broad framework. We may fill it with all kinds of things, but the fact that we come back again, there is nothing like a permanent death, so to say. The only permanent thing is the divine, the one without a second, so there is nothing to worry about. We may take this world as an illusion, in which case there is nothing to worry about. We may take it as a manifestation of the divine, in which case there is nothing to worry about. Everything is a manifestation of the divine, and a divine wisdom is operating one way or the other. If we take that standpoint that there is nothing which happens without somewhere deep inside the sanction of the divine wisdom, then again there is nothing to worry about. So whichever way we look at it logically, there is really nothing to be afraid of death. Attachments, yes, true. People will be left behind, yes, true. But we won't be there to remember it, maybe during the passage. Those will be left behind, yes, they may go through a sorrow if we have been really good to humanity. Or for all we know, if we have not been so good, they may feel a sigh of relief. Thank God, good riddance, whatever, they may shed crocodile tears. But in any case, if it's a good riddance, well, they'll be happy. If it's not a good riddance, if they are, they feel the suffering, sooner or later, time and above all the divine grace will heal and everybody will be back to their life, because that's how life is. So there is nothing to really be worried about and be afraid of death. We can take another stance of those religions which don't believe in rebirth. They believe in one birth. One birth is, that's it. Though it's very absurd that one birth where we start with a clean slate, because there is no birth, so we start with a clean slate. Now, we start with a clean slate in different circumstances, in different places. First of all, you know, it's if there is only one birth, then it's really very unfair to start with different beliefs, etc., etc. But nevertheless, even if we take that belief system, however absurd, illogical it may be, but they also believe that there is something which does not die with death. There is a ruh or a soul which, or an entity which persists, which rises from the grave after, you know, finally when there is the Mahapralaya, when the world is destroyed, and it goes to the seat of judgment. Nevertheless, then instead of being afraid, the logical thing is that do things which are good. Lead a sattvic life. Lead a life that, you know, the divine would be happy about. Not what the Maulvis and Qazis and the priests would tell us, but we can directly come in touch with the divine and read, and our heart will tell us what is a deed that would make this world happier and more beautiful, and our own life more happier and beautiful. What will create harmony? What will create unity and peace and light? We don't really need to read a book or need to meet a priest who will interpret it for us. We know it within our heart. And when we know it, we lead that life trying to avoid as much as possible, at least certainly not giving conscious prem or conscious pain and harm to others. Conscious prem we must give, prem in Hindi, but certainly not pain and harm, conscious injury. But yes, sometimes our actions may be the cause of pain. We have acted according to our own truth, swadharma, for something beautiful and noble as Arjuna in the Gita, but it may give pain to others. But here there is no conscious will to do injury or pain. We are acting according to the truth, the highest truth and the highest standards of conduct available to us. So if we live that life, we should not worry. When the judgment seat we are called, we'll be happy to rush to meet with the Creator. And surely He knows best. He knows what we have done, and we'll surely go rush and meet into His arms. Then the only thing to be afraid is not death, but our life. How we are leading our life. Are we really leading a life in tune with what the God of a particular religion wants us to do? So that should be our stress, and not after death. Because after death, there is nothing more we can do. Then there can be a materialist position. So here also there is nothing to worry about death. The materialist position is there is no soul. Religions are all, you know, fictions and imaginations of the mind, hallucination. And I'm not going into this debate here, though it is again a most illogical thing to believe that the entire creation came into existence somehow out of nothingness, almost like things coming out of the magician's hat, to say that either it's an illusion, materialistic illusion, or from the spiritual point of view, an illusion. Now, there is something, okay, we can understand that we don't perceive it correctly. There is a distortion of perception. But to say there is nothing and yet there is something which perceives there is something is an absurdity. As somebody has very beautifully pointed out, you know, somebody wrote a lovely book, The End of Science. So he is a science journalist, and he has taken various positions. And he says the problem with materialist position is this eternal question that why there is something instead of nothing in the universe. How did that something start? Even if we say a small little atom, a spark, where did it come from? So if you go back to energy, then again we are lost in the same conundrum that energy came from where. We go deeper into consciousness. So ultimately we push the question away, or we can choose to remain shut in our ignorance and say no, there is only matter, but it's no more tenable logically and rationally. But even if we take that extreme position, there is nothing which survives after death, then what is the worry or fear? Again, then the only thing we should be worried about, how we lead our life. Lead it nicely, nobly, beautifully. If there is a challenge, an illness for example, to face it with courage. We know materially, material science tells us that if we are in a state of depression, fear, anxiety, then it's not good for our immune system. So we face it with courage, we face it with peace, regardless of our belief or non-beliefs in an afterlife. And everything we must do which can bring peace and courage into our system, whether it be a practice of mindful meditation, or it can be simply adopting a certain attitude of life, or reading inspiring stories, or come in contact with people who can give us courage, because they who have courage can give courage to others. Whatever it be, if we believe that life is only about matter, then let's lead a life which is beautiful, noble, high, uplifted, not a life of again anger and all the time fighting with everybody as if, you know, because it's one brief life. At least let's try for others who are going to come to make it beautiful. That much we can do. Even if it's pure matter, when we pass away, somebody else is going to live. Our children, our grandchildren. So let's give them a beautiful home. So either which way, it's not death we should be afraid about. Our focus should be on life. A life well lived, nobly lived, lived with courage, lived with, if possible, faith in the divine grace, lived to come more and more in contact with the soul within us and the grace above us, a life which is truly an uplifting life, a life which is useful, unselfish, useful not just to ourselves and our family, but useful to others, a life which is unselfish. That is what our focus should be on, rather than on trying to understand the mystery of death. A life well lived will automatically reveal to us the mystery of death itself. And then we discover that the Sphinx which was sitting on the way to try to jump upon us was actually a benevolent face. The power that was slaying us, wearing the mask and terror of death, was actually a benevolent power hidden behind. The mask will be ripped off, and behind death we will see the smiling face of the divine beloved. We had assumed this mask because we had, our material was very crude. Shobindu says in one of his aphorisms, he says, wherefore God hammers this world so fiercely? Why does he need to do it? He says, because humanity is still the crude ore. And then he says, if humanity changes, his ways also will change into something gentler, sweeter, and nobler. So if we change into a nobler humanity, the divine dealing with us will also become gentler and sweeter. To Duryodhana and his ilk, he stands on the battlefield of Kurukshetra as the upholder of dharma, bearing the, as the chakradhari, as the time, the destroyer. But to gopis and gopes, he picks up his flute and calls them to the world of delight and love. Thank you.